cowboys went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plow through the ragged sky, and up a cloudy draw.
This is Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona with Western Short Stories. As I mentioned the last couple of times we've gotten together, I was lucky enough to recently come across a volume of cowboy poetry, brief reminiscences, and short stories by Bruce Kiskaden. So we will continue reading it today. This is Shorty's Yarns, Western Stories and Poems of Bruce Kiskaden. This book is by B. Kiskaden, K. Field, and B. Seams, published in 2004 in Logan, Utah by Utah University Press. And before we begin, I'll remind you as usual that our stories are sometimes edited slightly for recording. We begin with a poem entitled Startin' Out. When you have to start out on a cold winter day, the wind blowing cold and the sky is dull gray, you blow on the bit till you take out the frost, then you put on the bridle and saddle your hoss. He squats and he shivers, he blows through his nose. The blanket is stiff, for the sweat is sure froze. Then you pick up your saddle and swing it up high, till the stirrups and cinches and latigos fly. The pony, he flinches and draws down his rump. There's a chance he might kick, and he's likely to jump. He rolls his eye at you and shivers like jelly when you pull that old frozen cinch up on his belly. It's cold on his back, and you're freezing your feet, and you'll likely find out when you light on your seat that you ain't got no tropical place for to sit. It's likely the saddle ain't none overhead. But a cowboy don't pay no attention to weather. He gets out of his bed, gets into the leather. In the winter, it's mighty unpleasant to ride, but that's just the time when he's needed outside. And these stories are from the chapter Introducing Bill. The first one is entitled Bill Plays Ghost. When me and Bill pulls into the home ranch, we finds two fellers fixing the fences and the house and the barn and the corrals. One was an Englishman named Ed, and the other was an Irishman named Mike. They had been sailors all their life and was just traveling around to see what dry land was like. They was good hands at that sort of work, and they talked so funny that me and Bill had to laugh at them all the time. And they laughed at us, and reckoned we was plumb funny, too. But in a couple of days, we got to know them, and they had seen a heap of the world, and they was good fellers. Sunday, they says they aim to go into the galley and bile up and wash their kit, which we finds means going into the kitchen and washing their clothes. After dinner, Ed, he walks up to the boss and says, "Skipper," he says, "me matey wants to go ashore for a spell. He'll be back for long, and could he cruise over to the village on that big mule as has been adrift in the pasture this week? She looks like a safe craft, and we have her docked in by the barn." The boss winks at the boys and says he reckons so, and me and Bill eases down where we can see the fun, and maybe help if they get tangled too bad with old Jack the mule. They goes into the corral. "Give us the heaving line, mate," says Mike, and Ed hands him my rope. Mike coils it careful-like and leaves a little cat loop in the end. Then he heaves it, coils and all, right at old Jack, and derned if he don't get him with the loop and two coils right round the neck. "Tow him up to the bits and make fast," yells Ed. "Now for the steering gear," says Mike. And Ed comes out of the shed with a work bridle that has two hitch reins snapped onto the bit. They gets the bridle onto old Jack, and Ed runs over and grabs my saddle blankets. I'm about to kick, but Bill says not to stop the show. Here's the batten, he says. Get over on the starboard side and see I lay her trim. Don't go astern, the beggar might kick. Cross his bows and keep forward, that's it. Now hold hard on her bowlines while I heave the crow's nest topside. Aye, that's the style. Now pass me the riggins under her keel, and I'll lash her fast. They did a pretty good job of saddling, if they did go at it somewhat awkward. Board her from the port side, says Ed. Grab the bowsprit and cock your foot into the ladder round. Up Mike goes and finds a hogging string tied in the front wangs. What's this lanyard fur? He asks. To flog with, I reckon, says Ed. And a fine ID, too. All right, cast her off, says Mike, and Ed unties old Jack from the post. Now flog aft with your lanyard, he yells. Pull hard on your starboard line. She's underway. That's right. She's coming about. He's off and haul the port line. Now, slack away and let her drift. I'll pile ye up the bloomin' gate. And old Jack walks off with Mike on his back. After Mike is gone, Ed tells us that Mike don't fear nothing but ghosts, but he's terrible afraid of ghosts, and he wants we should skeer that Irishman out of a year's growth. So we gets a tarp and cuts eye holes in it, gets a beef skull with the horns on, wires it onto the tarp for a head. Then Bill ties two beef bones onto his stirrups for legs, and gets a big bone to hold in each hand for arms. And then we gets old Snowflake, a plumb gentle old white hoss, and waits for dark. Ed's going to hide behind some brush in the draw, and after Mike gets past, he aims to take after him, and we know if he don't scare Mike, he'll sure scare the mule. Well, it's time we saddle up, but old Snowflake won't let Bill mount him in a rig like that, so we blindfolds the old hoss and Bill climbs on. We has another laugh, for Bill looks 10 foot high, and his head is a skull with horns on, and his bone legs most nigh drags the ground. I pulls off the blind from old Snowflake, and boy howdy. He squats and snorts, then he lights into bucking like I never see a hoss his age buck before. And poor Bill ain't got a chance to ride him wrapped up like he is. Ahoy there, yells Ed. Haul hard on your bowlines. Oh, me oath, he's on his beam ends, he'll capsize. Bear a hand, mate. Bill's overboard and afoul of the wreckage. He'll be stove in afore we can cut him clear. Oh, Lord, Bill's sunk, and the beast is adrift with the riggins. I can't do nothing for laughing to see Bill bucked off that tarp fast to the saddle, and Bill and them bones a-flying all roads. Bill gets him on ropped from the tarp, and he ain't hurt much, only his feelings. Pretty soon Mike comes in feeling good, and has jug, which he says he lashed fast to the bowsprit of his saddle. Well, we all took a bracer and felt better. Next morning, at breakfast, Ed tells the yarn with all the trimmings, and the boss and the cook just roars. I didn't know, says Mike, that a cowboy was supposed to go overboard for just a bit of a squall like that. After breakfast, Bill packs up his bed hoss and saddles up. The boss hates to see him go, but he fixes up his check and tells him to come back when he's tired of the high country. The two sailors is there to open the gate for him, and Ed yells, Good luck, matey. Sorry you're jumping ship at this port, but we may run across ye later. Then he says to the boss, He's a fine lad, skipper, but he needs a bit of a rest and overhauling, for he walks and sets like he got a big stove up astern in the wreck last night. Now we have another poem entitled, That Letter. I rode to that box a-settin' on a post beside the trail. that her outfit used for getting all their messages and mail. There, I got a little letter and the envelope was pink. It sure set me feeling better, but it sorter made me think. Yes, the feeling was surprising underneath my Stetson hat. I could feel my hair arising like the bristles of a cat. Well, I tore that letter open, and I read it through and through. All the time I was a-hopin' I would savvy what to do. Men, they's quick upon the trigger, come to tangle-ups and fights. But a woman, you can't figure what she means by what she writes. It was purty and invitin' like a sunny day in spring. She'd done a heap of writin', but she hadn't said a thing. Now, when men folks start to writin', you can mostly understand. And the stuff that they're a-citin' stands out plain, just like a brand. They don't never do no plan. They've a sort of a sudden way. For they start right in by sayin' what they started out to say. Men is given to expressin' what they mean right then and there. But a woman keeps you guessin' till your mind goes everywhere. For a spell, I'd do some thinkin', then I'd start again and read. I kept frownin' and a-blinkin', till at last I got her lead. In that letter, there was lurkin' just one simple, plain idee. When I got my mind a-workin', it was plain enough to see. For she said, her and her mother, come a Saturday next week, would be over with her brother to the dance on Turkey Creek. On the start, you see, I never had no notion what she meant. She'd fixed it up right clever in the way the letter went. Man, I sure did whoop and beller when the idee hit me fair. She'd come without no feller, and she aimed to meet me there. It sure made me like her better, for that bashful gal of mine went and built that whole dern letter just to write that single line. And now we're going to read about Bill and Realty Briggs in a story entitled Bill's Joke Goes Wrong. Sunday morning, 2 weeks after Bill has strung out for the high country, we've eaten breakfast, and the boss's wife, she speaks up and says, I don't reckon Bill has gone up to the high country. The way him and Realty Briggs made sheep's eyes at each other down at the schoolhouse dance, I bet he bent that old sorrel hoss off the road fur enough to go into Lige Briggs' place and tell Realty goodbye. That there's a smart idea, I says. And old Lige ain't losing any chuck rider that will work like Bill. And Bill, he's fool enough to hang around all summer and work like the dickens just to be where Realty's at. Then the missus, she lights into a talk about what she thinks of the Briggs tribe, but the boss, he makes her be still. Well, I says, I reckon it won't do no harm to get on my Sunday hoss and lope over there and find out. If he's a-workin' for Lige Briggs, says the boss, leave him stay there. And I says, all right. After about 2 hours' ride, I comes inside of Briggs's place, which is between two ridges on a crick. He's fenced in pasture on each side, so you have to go through a lane to get there, no matter which side you come from. I sees a cloud of dust a-comin' in from the other side of the crick, and I know that it is Zeke Briggs, Lige's worthless brother. He used to come most every Sunday and stay till the middle of Monday, bring his wife, 6 kids. They'd eat all they could hold and get the team up, and then borrow some grain for hoss feed and what groceries they could, and then go back home for what was left of the next week. Next, I looks down at the place, and there's Bill and the two oldest kids getting an old red range stray out of the meadow where they raised winter feed. They got him into the corral, and Bill gets an old slicker. One of the kids gets an old canteen and puts rocks in it. I can see it all, for by now I've rode up and got down on the ground, and I'm looking through the fence at the show. Bill takes his old hoss and puts the steer into the chute pen, and them kids and him run him into the chute and bars him in tight. Then Bill wires that old canteen of rocks and the old slicker onto the steer's tail plenty tight. They turn him out, and the way that old bay steer goes up the lane a-squallin' and bellerin' is sure plenty fast. Right then over the ridge above the ranch comes Zeke Briggs and his wife and 6 kids. When the team meets that steer, they take out for home and upset the wagon and spread Zeke and his brood all over the lane. They have the front wheels of the wagon and are still ahead of the steer when they all top the ridge. Bill's old pack horse is in the pasture right close to the gate, and I hazes him into the corral, and we ropes him and makes for the bunkhouse. All Lige Briggs's fambly has started up there on foot, and are running to make a work and tally up on Zeke Briggs' family to see how they come out of the wreck. And Bill and me has a sneaking idea that we better be gone when they get back. We throws the old bed and war bag on, and hitches her, and makes for the open country in a high lope. Then Bill, he speaks for the first time. "I don't know where you come from," he says, "but I'm sure glad you got here." When we are eating supper at the home ranch that night, the boss's wife wants to know if she wins the coat she has seen in the catalog, and the boss says he reckons she does. Then, she tells us how she bet him a new pair of boots, again the coat, that I'd bring Bill back with me. "He never had nothing to do with it," says Bill, and then he ups and tells them the whole story. Bill don't seem to think it's so funny, but nobody else can get a full breath for the next 10 minutes. When the boss's wife gets so she can talk, she says, "It's a even break to bet on anything under the sun when you two boys is around. Thanks for the coat, Shorty." Our next story is entitled, Bill Has Luck. Me and Bill is making a little trip to town between works. I've wrote the millinery lady 3 letters, and she's wrote me 1 which says to come and see her when I'm in town. Bill, he wants me to give him a knock down to this here lady, and I tell him she ain't that sort of lady that takes up with the average drinking, swearing cowhand. But, seeing he's a friend of mine, I'll make him used to her. When we gets to town, the train is just pulled in, and a lot of tourists is out there on the platform to get some sea and fresh air. Bill and me rides over to the depot to do a little looking ourself. And there's a good-looking feller with a big mustache and a tailor-made suit a-tellin' the folks all about it. This feller has on the finest pair of cowboy boots I ever did see, and they're all shined up. You can tell they ain't never had no wear from spurs and stirrups. But what takes our eyes is hat. He has a big beaver Stetson, as big as a sideshow tent, and I bet it cost $25 if it cost a dime. He's so busy wearing and a-waving this here hat, well, he's explaining all the whys and whereases to the tourists, that it's all he can do to find time to twist his mustache. We are sure puzzled as to what sort of hombre he is, for he ain't no cowman. He's all pink and white, ain't had no more weather and hard work and bad water than a canary bird in a city home. Bill says, "Shorty," he says, "I need a hat. Back my play." The train don't stop long, and Bill has to work fast, and he does. He walks over to the stranger with his old brush-battered hat in his hand and smiles real pleasant-like, and he says, "Some hat you got there, stranger. Just look at the difference between your hat and mine." And he grabs that there handsome hat and hands the feller his. And before you know it, Bill's put the hat on and is climbing onto his horse. I does my play right now. I hollers at Bill to give the man his hat and calls him a thief and takes after him on old Jug, but he outruns me on Chunky. I gallops right back to the depot and tells the man that I know this here waddy, and that I also know the town marshal, and to give me his address, and I'll see he gets his hat, or that this here thievin' cuss goes to jail. For Western folks is honest, and don't aim to be disgraced. That gent, he hands me a card with his name and address, all printed out on it, a purpose just for him individual, which is a right smart ID, seeing maybe he can't write good, and that it sure saves time. The train pulls out, and he boards it, and leaves Bill's old hat a-layin' on the platform. I takes the hat and goes over to the livery barn, and in about 5 minutes, in comes Bill. We puts our hosses away, and then we express Bill's old hat to the stranger's address, C-O-D. Also, we send him a telegram on the train that his hat has been sent, so he don't worry no more till he gets Bill's old hat. I go up to Jake's place to have a couple of drinks and sort of compose my mind as to introduce Bill proper to the millinery lady. Some little time gets away from me before I know it, and in walks Bill, and he's been to the barber shop and got all slicked up and his boots shined, and nothing'll do but what I take him to meet the lady right now. Well, she admires that hat right first off, and Bill takes it off and puts it on her head, and being millinery-minded, she talks hats aplenty. The hat looks grand, and after all the perfume the barber has put on Bill's head, it even smells grand. I ain't got no place, for I'm just a little bow-legged, seedy-looking waddy, so I don't say nothing. But I leaks out from there and makes for Jake's place again. Pretty soon, Bill, he comes in, takes one with me. Then we go up to the hotel where we stop when we are in town, and we signs up for a room. In a little side room back from the office, there seems to be a card game on, and we takes a look. A mighty slick-looking feller is dealing, and he seems to have a little argument now and then with another town feller that is a stranger to him. The game is to take and pick the ace from amongst three cards after he has dealed them face down. We all make a few small bets, and win or lose a little, and it seems to be a little game, and all friendly. But Bill, he sneaks me away for a couple of minutes, and wises me up about what is going to happen. "Never give a sucker a break," says Bill. "That's their game, and it works both ways if they get some filler that ain't a sucker." Well, I gives Bill mighty nigh all my roll, and we goes back. Right soon after that, the dealer goes away and leaves his cards, and this here other town feller marks the ace with his thumbnail, till the dealer could feel it if he couldn't see it. When he comes back, a freighter wins a little bet. So does a mule skinner, and the town feller he does too. And then he starts to hurrah this dealer about being afraid to back his game. The dealer says he will take all he'll put up, and the feller only has $3. The dealer says he's a piker, and that all of us is pikers, and if we think he's afraid of his game, to come on. Right now, Bill comes in and throws down his money, and mine too, and asks the dealer to lay him out. The dealer covers the bet and deals, and there's that marked card laying in the middle. Bill slaps his hands down on all three cards. "It's the one on the left," he says. "'Tain't this'n, 'tain't this'n," he says. And he turns the marked card, which ain't the ace, and he turns the card on the right, which ain't the ace neither. "Here's your money, Bill," I says, just as he turns the cards, gathers up the dough, and throws it into the front of my shirt, which is unbuttoned. This catches him off stride, and the capper and the dealer jines up to angry. But before they get going, the mule skinner grabs Bill's hand and turns it over. That ain't no ace neither. "Say," yells the mule skinner, "this here game is crooked, and I lost $10. And he grabs up his chair, but afore he can swing it, them two gents is gone to no place. Me and Bill goes up to our room and cuts the money. And suppose, I says, that them fellers had been good enough to have left the ace on the table, figuring you would sure take the marked card. In that case, says Bill, I still had an even break, for I knowed the marked card wasn't the ace. I goes over to the barn and tends to the hosses, then to the barber shop, gets all slicked up. And just as I'm going up to see the millinery lady, I meets her and Bill coming down the street. They tells me they're going to the theater show, which is at the Opry House that night. They has the gal from the Hotel Cigar stand with them, and she says she wants to go for a horseback ride in the moonlight. And Bill, he speaks up real big-hearted like, and he says he'll let us have old Chunky if we want to go. And the gal is all tickled about that she's going to ride a cow hoss on a big saddle. And I know, and so does Bill, that a horseback ride is about as much fun for a cowboy as digging a ditch is for a section hand. Well, it wasn't so bad. The cigar gal, she wasn't as little and cute as the millinery lady, but she was a heap better at telling funny stories and was a lot more romantic-like. So me and her agreed to turn the millinery lady over to Bill, and that I and her would keep company when I come to town. Our next story is entitled, Bill Goes to Turkey Creek Dance. One night, little Sammy Jackson rides into camp and gives it out that there's going to be a dance at his dad's ranch over on Turkey Creek, and it is time so that the wagon will be an easy riding distance of there that night. Of course, me and Bill went along with the rest of the boys, and things was a-going fine till Rildy Briggs comes in with a feller that was a stranger to most of us. Bill, he sure looks at him jealous, for he ain't forgot Rildy, and that feller is a big good-looking man, and all dressed up in store-bought clothes. The make it wuss, she don't speak to Bill, but gives him a sorter high-chinned look. I sizes this hombre up and sees that he's plenty tall and wide with it, too, and has a gun under his glad rags in a shoulder holster. I don't like him. Not any. Old Miss Jackson tells me that his name is Barnes and he's working on the ranch for Rildy's dad. The boys was all peaceful and keeping in line, except two or three kids that was a little too young to shave and just old enough to want to show off a heap. Barnes, he goes a lot out of his way to declare hisself and allow that he ain't scared of nobody and that there's going to be order there or he'll know why. Nobody liked that, for we'd all allowed we could just about take care of ourselves, and that passel of kids was plumb harmless. Wasn't very long till little Johnny Curtin comes falling in at the door drunk, and he bumps again a couple that is dancing, and right now this Barnes, he grabs him by the slack of the pants, slings him out at the door, and declares himself again. Bill is going to take it up, but I get him stopped. We goes outside, and I see Bill is talking to the kids, and that Barnes and Rildy is sitting in a winder with their backs sticking out in the dark. Sammy comes out and hands Bill his dad's old six-shooter, and I begin to get scared. But Bill, he steps up quiet-like with the gun in his left hand. And what does he do but hit Barnes a terrible punch over the kidney with his right hand, and at the same time, he fires the gun into the ground with his left. Rildy gives a scream, and Barnes, he hollers that he's shot, falls into the room, and keeps hollering for help and for a doctor. Next, he's giving out dying messages for his folks, and when I ask him if he ain't got no farewell word for Rildy, he says that he's already married. And right then the wagon boss was on the job and jerks Barnes' coat and vest off and separates his pants and shirt, starts looking for the bullet hole. Barnes has on a pair of big broad galluses, which we stripped down. We also took off his six-gun. We was having a heap of fun till them fool kids up and tells what Bill done. And say, that Barnes feller, he wasn't dying no more. He bellers out a string of cuss words and plows right into Bill like a mad bull. And you bet Bill is right there to tear up sand with him. Barnes' shirt tail is out, his galluses is a floppin' wild, and all the folks that don't get out of the way gets knocked over, tromped down till they clinch, go to the floor together. And at their house it shakes like a wagon box on a rocky road. Realty rushes up and tries to kick Bill, but she fouls her foot in one of them galooses, and she falls down, and they both go a-rollin' over till she yells like a mashed cat. Bill's overalls is shrunk and tight, and the seat busts open with the strain, and his red flannel under drawers shows up mighty plain. And old Miss Jackson yells that he's been knifed, her not having good eyesight, having got her specs knocked off in the fracas. About that time, both men is on their feet again, and it's anybody's fight till Rildy grabs a big specimen rock that is used to prop the door open, and she slams it at the back of Bill's head. But just then, Bill dodges from a lick, and the stone goes a-past his head and hits Barnes between the eyes and knocks him stiff as a plank. After that, them two fellers is pulled apart by the crowd, and the wagon boss grabs Rildy round the waist and hollers for the fiddlers to strike up the music. For he says that Rildy is a heap better at dancing than she is at throwing rocks. And he makes so much fun for everybody that the dance goes on peaceable again. But you can see by the looks of that Barnes feller that he figures maybe Rildy busted him with that rock a purpose. And you can see, too, that Rildy has gone plumb foolish over the wagon boss, which makes Bill and Barnes so jealous-minded that they goes outside, makes up, talks about the unsartainness and foolishness of women folks in general. Next we will read, Bill Takes the Mules to Preachin'. The wagon boss didn't make such a hit with Rildy Briggs as a feller might think, because when we gets back from work, the boss's wife, she tells us that Rildy is took up with a young preacher that comes and preaches in the valley sometimes, and that he's going to have a meeting in the schoolhouse on Sunday night. Bill, he allows we are to go see what sort of hombre this preacher is. And I agrees, for from the way Bill acts, I figure there's going to be a little action before it's all over. Sunday night we saddles up to go, but Bill stalls around till the boss and his wife goes. Then he takes his saddle off in the hoss and leads out the old mule team, Jack and Judy. He saddles old Judy, tells me to saddle Jack. I ain't stuck on riding that old work mule, but knowing it's part of Bill's game, I does it. We get to preaching while they're a-singing, and they are sure going on like a revival. And above all the bellerin', you can hear some feller singin' bass. We looks in at the winder, and boy, howdy, if there ain't the preacher. Better than 6 foot tall and 200 pound if he weighed an ounce, all bone and muscle, too. And he's not so young, but middle-aged, and right at his best. You could see in a minute the crowd was with him. We light off, and I tie Jack to the hitching rack, and Bill takes Judy round to the other side of the schoolhouse, and we gets into a back seat just as the singing is over, and the preacher starts to pray. I get Bill's ID and like to bust out a-laughing right now, for if them mules can't see each other, they'll keep a-braying as long as they can hear each other. The preacher, he's just started to pray, and a old brother hollers, "Amen." "Yee-haw! Yee-haw!" hollers old Judy. One old sister hollers, "Glory!" And old Jack brays out, "Yee-haw! Yee-haw!" "Oh, Lord, we lifts our voices," says the preacher. And right then both mules cut loose with a bray that a deaf and dumb could a heard a mile away. Rildy, She slips back to us and whispers that she's going to tie the mules together so they'll be quiet. She goes outside. I gives Bill a shove and winks for him to follow her, for I figure the play is Bill's, for the preacher has the bull by the tail and can't turn loose seeing he's all fouled up with his praying right about then. Bill, he don't move, so I starts to go. But Bill, he pulls me back onto the seat. Well, we don't hear the mules no more. And pretty soon, Rildy comes in and sets down, looking very polite and mannerful. But all the same, it looks like Bill has got the preacher down, for everybody's tickled, and some of the young folks has got to where they don't try to keep from laughing. But the preacher, he just laughs too, and then he says he guesses he better preach about a mule, and he sure does. He preaches about a feller named Absalom that lived back in Bible times, and he went and made a war, tried to steal the country away from his dad. Seems like this here Absalom was a brat that had been spoilt in the raisin. He was a good-looking cuss, wore long hair, rode a mule. And once, when there was a big fight on, this here mule, he cold jaws on this Absalom feller, stampedes into the brush. And Absalom got drug off. And while he was fouled up by the hair, the other outfit come up and speared him to death. That preacher makes it pretty strong that Absalom wasn't much of a hand, or he wouldn't be riding a mule. And the laugh was sure on me and Bill, but we had to take it. After meeting, Rildy comes and talks to us till the folks had all said good night and gone, and the preacher fetches his team and buggy to take her home. And she even lets Bill help her climb in, and we says good night and goes to get our mules. The mules is gone, and we are loose on foot 6 miles from the ranch. That walk wasn't nothing cheerful, and I tell Bill he's a fool for letting that gal get loose alone like that, and he ought to listen to me. All right, says Bill. I didn't listen to you at the meeting, but I expect to listen to you all the way home. But the boss met us with the spring wagon before we got halfway, because he'd found the mules waiting at the pasture gate. He said Rildy had tied them together all right, but she hadn't tied them up to nothing, so they just naturally went home. The next night, after supper, they sure hurrahed us a heap. And for once, the boss's wife takes up for Rildy and says she's a plumb smart gal, and she reckons that their Absalom sermon was a good one, and the preacher come out of that tangle about right. Wait till he preaches the one about Samson, says Bill. What do you mean, says the boss. Well, says Bill, here's a feller that got mixed up with a woman instead of a mule, and he wore long hair, too. Appears like them long-haired fellers didn't have much luck back there in Bible times. Now our story is entitled, The Preacher Loses His Team. It was give out that there'd be a preaching at the schoolhouse a Sunday, and Bill didn't aim to be bluffed out, so he says to me that he's going over if I'll go along, and he aims to go in and sit right there, even if the preacher is there with his gal. Now this gal, Rildy Briggs, couldn't mind her own affairs no more than a pet hen, for she'd done just as she darn pleased ever since she was a young yearling. And we heard that she'd done and took the preacher's buggy team and gone a-visitin' for a couple of days at a time, left him a-settin' at her dad's ranch till she got back. I knowed that meant trouble, for he had the purtiest and spryest little roan team that was ever in them parts, and say how he took care of them. Well, when we got to the schoolhouse, the folks was pretty well gathered for meetin', and the preacher wasn't there yet. But we soon see him a-comin', and Rildy was in the buggy, and she was a-drivin'. Her kid brother and sister was a-ridin' along behind on a pair of old willer-tailed ponies. When they gets close, Rildy starts showin' off and whips up the team and holds him in to make him step high. Just then her kid brother jumps an old mare that's runnin' loose around there and throws a loop around her rump to spook her. Loop snaps off her rump all right, but her tail is full of burrs and the rope catches and holds. Boy, howdy. That button has his rope tied fast, and the way the old mare jerks his dinky makeshift saddle off ain't no ways slow. This kid lets a yell out of him, and the old mare cuts a past the preacher's team with that saddle a-flying around on the end of the rope, and that there team leaves from there right now. Afore the preacher can grab the lines, they've left the road and jumped the little arroyo. That is, the team jumped it, but the buggy stayed right there. And Rildy and the preacher dove right over the dashboard head first and lands out on the other side. The team takes the buggy tongue and tails in behind the kid's pony, but right then the old mare cuts across in front of them, and that saddle and rope tangles all in amongst them. Down they go in a pile, and the old mare can't pull loose, but she sure ain't a-throwin' off a bit, and the way she pulls is terrible. By that time, me and Bill has forked our horses and got to the wreck, and I cuts the rope and stops the worst of the damage. But when we untangled that team, they was a sight. They was fresh shod, and the way they tore each other up, you couldn't believe it. And the rope had got around the nigh hoss's hind foot, and he was lamed up till he couldn't put that foot to the ground. The preacher lands on the scene, and Bill says, "Nah, if they'd been mules, they'd never have done it." I stops Bill short, tells him it ain't no time to joke, and by doing so, stops trouble. For that parson man is on the peck, and no fooling. The boss tells me and Bill to take the team over to the ranch, take our time about it, and doctor him up. The preacher comes home with the boss and his wife, and the next morning they sends me down to Briggs for the preacher's valise. Rildy and the kids is all full of talk, and she says to tell the preacher to come right down there, explain his conduct by not ever speaking to her, and letting old man Johnson and his wife fetch her and the kids home. When I gets to the ranch, the preacher and one of the hands has got his buggy there, with a pair of shafts in it, and he's traded his little team to the boss for a big old workhorse, and is all ready to leak out from there soon as I get there with the valise. I starts to talk to him about his team, but I see I'm all wrong. "Don't mention them," he says. "They're plumb spoilt now. I broke 'em, and I drove 'em for 3 years. They was high-strung, but it's the first trouble I ever had with 'em. I don't ever want to see them again. Tell your friend Bill goodbye for me. I've already said goodbye to the folks." I watched him drive the old hoss out of the gate. Sure felt sorry for him. That night at supper, the boss's wife was a-doing a heap of talking about Rildy and her doings, and she wasn't for her no more, but she was sure pitying the preacher to death. When the boss, he grins and says, "Well, if he ever comes back to these parts, I reckon either me or Bill have to ask him if he won't preach that there sermon about Samson, like Bill said, in place of the mule sermon about Absalom." The boss's wife was about to get mad, and then she busts out laughing and says maybe Bill is right about women folks being a heap dangerouser to men than mules ever dare be. Now we will read Bill Leaves for the High Country. When we get settled down from laughing about Rildy, and the kid brother and the preacher things sorter slid along for a few days, and then one evening about dark in rides Rildy and has supper, and when the folks ask her to stay all night, she allows she might. The boss's wife looks at Bill right pleasant-like, and asks Bill if maybe he can't put up the dishes. And Rildy grins at him, but Bill, he ain't having none, and he says right pint blank that he's a-going a-visitin' some folks down on the crick. And he goes down to the bunkhouse, pulls off his shirt, and begins to shave. I don't say nothing, but I figure Bill is just 3 shirts. So I takes all 3 of them and dips the tails in the water bucket, and a flannel shirt don't dry so quick, that a feller would want to ride 4 mile and back with a wet shirt tail when it's freezing weather. I don't do no dressing up myself, but I just hightails that over there to where them two gals lived on the creek and leaves Bill to figure it out the best he can. And I reckon he can't get into none of my clothes, and so he's got to set by the bunkhouse stove and wait for his'n to dry. It was a doing him right, for he ain't got no call to get so sassy with a pretty gal like Rildy when she comes all that way up to the ranch to sorter make up with him. When I gets to where I'm going, them two gals are pleasant enough, but they started to do a heap of asking why Bill never come along, and I see that he had my time beat there, so I had to tell them the whole affair, and they sure laughed fit to kill. When I got back to the bunkhouse, it was late. The place smelled like somebody'd beat a skunk to death in there. I know the hoss had trapped and shot a skunk the day before over by the hoss corral, but I reckon there wasn't no more skunks about. I lit the lamp to see how Bill had took my joke. Bill wasn't there. Bill's bed was gone, and when I went to the corral, his saddle was gone too. I crawled into my bed, and I like to have strangled, and I felt a funny lump of something. I lit the lamp again, and if that darn Bill hadn't took and put that dead skunk plumb in the middle of my bed. I had to hang my bed outside for overnight, and I built up a fire and set by the stove till morning. The only thing that comforted me was a pair of old overalls that was still warped to the shape of Bill's legs, and a pair of wore-out boots he'd throwed on top of them. It wasn't really airy one of these, but on top of the heap was a wet shirt tail that had been cut off rough and sudden with a sharp pocket knife. That sorter made me feel even, for I knowed I was settin' comfortable by a warm stove, while Bill was a-ridin' out for high country on a freezin' cold night, without no tail in his shirt. Now we will read Shorty is Bill's secretary. About a month after Bill is vamoosed for the high country, a letter comes to the ranch for him. I opens it and reads it. The letter's from the millinery lady. She tells him awful sad-like that she'd never dast tell him she was married. But now, seeing as her husband has divorced her, married a gal back east, she's at last free, though dead broke. The main reason for her writing is that the cigar stand gal is terrible sick in the hospital back in Chicago, needs money to save her life, and she hopes Bill'll tell me so's me and him can help her out, seeing we're the only folks she can turn to for help in this here big and hostile West. I reads it over a few times, and I reckon since Bill ain't among them present, that it's up to me to take it over. So I writes to her like this. I says, "Dear Miss Dillaville, your letter is a rove, and me and Shorty is sure broke up about your hard luck. Because, if it hadn't been for bad luck, me and Shorty wouldn't have had no luck at all. We was all set to help you a plenty, and we had all the money we'd been saving for years tied up in a big red bandanny handkercher, and it smelt sorter moldy, so we put it out on the wash bench back in the bunkhouse to air out, so's it would smell proper for to hand it to a lady. And along comes a big stork. Them birds, you know, that finds the babies under bushes. And from the way this bundle is tied, he figures it is one of his'n, and he flies off with it before we could catch him. So if you hear of a stork fetching a passel of moldy bills to some house instead of a baby, you go right on over and explain it to him and get your money. We still had one more play left, so we got out all our diamond shirt studs and tie pins and cuff buttons and begins to figure what we could raise on him. We had several $100 worth of diamonds spread out on a saddle blanket when an old bull busts through the gate and chases us up onto the fence, and before we can get down, a flock of crows lights on that saddle blanket and eats up all them beautiful diamonds. To make it worse, That little fool, Shorty, starts smoking him up with his six-shooter and kills the boss's top hoss, which it will take the both of us 3 months to pay for. So you can't expect no help from us enduring that time. Then I signs it, "Your heart broke Bill," and sends it to her. I waits for an answer, but don't get none. A couple of weeks later, the boss sends me up to town with the mule team for a load of stuff. The livery stable man tells me that Bill is in the jailhouse, and has been since the day before. That he has had a big fight in the millinery store, and he's plumb wrecked the millinery lady's feller, and licked two town folks that tried to stop him, and blacked the millinery lady's eye. And by the time the town marshal and two other fellers got him bulldogged, they was hats and bunnets and glass and feathers scattered all over the place. Well, I goes to all the places I'm supposed to get stuff. Gets it, has it set out, so's I can get it right soon in the morning. And then I goes and tends to the team, after which I goes to the jailhouse to see Bill. He looks pretty good, only you can see that him and his cloths has been tore up and messed around considerable. I says hello, and he shakes hands and says, "There wasn't much trouble. I tied them on the outside of the pack, and they froze hard, and I kept slapping the ice off of them. Pretty soon they was dry." "What in the heck you talking about?" I says. "Them shirt tails you dipped in the water bucket, you pison little half-pint reptile," he says, and he gets mad because I laughs. It seems he ain't forgot about them shirts through all this ruckus, and they seems to be tangled in his memory plumb permanent. After we had talked careless for a spell, I asks Bill how come to get into the jailhouse. "Well," Bill says, "it is sure funny, and I can't just get the ID myself. You see, I comes back to these parts figuring I might get a job, seeing everything is snowed under for the winter up in the high country. I takes a couple of drinks and goes down to see the millinery lady. She starts on me about a letter I'd writ. I told her I ain't writ no letter. But she gets hostile, tells me to clear out from her place right now. Then that feller of hern comes in from the back room, takes a stack in the game. Just about the time I've got him stomped out in his rind, in comes a lot of folks that ain't got no business there atoll. And in the mix, I hits the millinery lady in the eye accidental, flattens her out. When the fight's over, I discovers that among them settin' on me is the town marshal. So you see, I fetched up here, and I don't give a good dern." I goes over to see the cigar stand gal, and she says her and the millinery lady ain't been friends for some distance, and that she was on a 3 weeks visit back to Missouri when that letter must have been writ. She gets a heap of fun out in it, and gives me some cigars to take the boss, and says to put in her word too when I asked him to come up and spring Bill out from the jail. Then I talks to the town marshal, and he laughs a heap, and says for me to fetch that letter and the boss to town with me. When I gets back to the ranch, the boss is sorter interested in the affair, and I'll show him the letter that was sent to Bill, told him about the answer I sent back. We gets in the spring wagon, goes to town, gets Bill out, and the town marshal keeps Miss D. LaVille's letter, says he aims to give her a talk again such tricks on poor ignorant cowpokes. I slips over to the little hospital for to see the millinery lady's feller, and tell him how they got Bill all wrong, but he's so bunged up he don't seem to care. And when we get home, the boss, he says it's mean enough to read a man's mail, but when a feller takes the ID to answer it to, he orter at least tell the man what he writ. And we will conclude with another poem entitled Going to Summer Camp. The winter is over, and the warm wind melts the snow. He's heading for the summer camp where wagons couldn't go. I'll bet that old boy's happy, for I know the way he feels, way up in that high country where there never has been wheels. He's got his grub and blankets and his cooking outfit now, and later on he'll have to pack some salt in for the cows. Before he's through, he'll have to make a few trips there and back, for everything that gets to camp goes up there in a pack. But he'll see the big fat cattle standing in the grass, knee-deep. He'll hear the pines and quaking asps before he goes to sleep. Them rapid little mountain streams is home sweet home for trout. They taste mighty good for breakfast. He knows how to fish 'em out. He'll be glad to get to camp and see the cabin once again. He wonders how it stood the snow, and if the roof fell in. For in the high country, in the summer, is the finest place of all, and he aims to stay until the snow has run him out next fall. And that concludes our readings today from Shorty's Yarns, Western Stories and Poems of Bruce Kiscadden. Thank you for joining us for Western Short Stories. This has been Dan Klingler, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plow through the ragged sky, and up a cloudy draw.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on On-Demand Podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.